Reality Bites.
Reality Bites
are back
again.
Oh, yeah. I never turned my mic on. I turned yours on, forgot to turn my on.
Hey!
It has been a few weeks, unfortunately.
Reality Bites is back.
Here we are indeed. This weekend, I thought we'd come in and talk about Hubble, because last weekend, it was also Australia Day, lest we forget. Anzac Day.
Anzac Day.
God, I'm doing well this morning. It was also the 32nd anniversary of the launch of Hubble.
32 years.
Now
on the 26th?
It was launched on the 25th.
Ah, right.
Launched on the 24th, deployed on the 25th.
Ah, okay.
Now, here's the fun one. What do you think the original mission length was supposed to be?
For Hubble?
10.
A little bit longer than that.
Okay.
15 years.
15 years.
Okay.
15 years.
It's doing pretty well.
It's doing pretty
well. Or has done pretty well, yeah.
It's very impressive.
It was actually also originally supposed to be launched in 86.
Really?
Yeah. Do you know what stopped it from being launched in 86?
The Ayatollah Khomeini.
No.
Oh.
Do you want to have a guess? Big space event that happened in 86.
Comet? Halley's Comet?
Oh. Oh, wait a second. Yeah, something a little more unfortunate.
A little more unfortunate.
Challenger 7.
Challenger happened in 86, and it was due to launch, I believe, later the same year, and then Challenger happened, or it might have been the following year. So Challenger happened and put the whole shuttle program on hold. They were basically waiting for the shuttle program to spin back up again and start doing things again.
Yeah. What date was Challenger? Was Challenger quite early in the year?
No, it was, if I remember correctly, it was in November, wasn't it?
It was later in the year.
Yeah, because it was in their winter.
So it was scheduled to go after Challenger.
Challenger, you know, basically put the whole thing on hold for, I think it was 2.5 years from when Challenger happened to when the next launch happened.
Oh, I've got, hang on, I've just looked it up. Here we go. It says January 28th, 1986.
Oh, January 28th. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, it was very early in the year.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. All right.
Yeah, so it was due to launch that year. So what they actually had to do, because Hubble was ready to go, like it was ready to be put.
Well, the telemetry's all been figured out, right? You know,
there's a really interesting one there. There was one thing that wasn't ready, which
was
the ground control software.
Oh,
they were going to launch it, and they didn't actually have software to control the thing.
Okay,
so it was going to go up into space. They were going to launch it, and
they had all their major Tom. Yeah.
Had everything in a row except actually being able to talk to the thing.
Okay.
So it got put on hold, and as part of that, they had to actually basically not mothball it, but put it in storage.
But that, I mean, it's the launch windows for something like this are, you know, fairly worked
well, no,
out fairly
Hubble,
well in
Hubble,
advance.
Hubble, I mean, Hubble's in a... circumpolar? No.
Geosynchronous?
Yeah, geosynchronous.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So
okay, all right.
Launch,
so you do it.
It can be whatever.
Okay.
You know, it doesn't really matter. But the fun part is that with something like Hubble, they actually power it up on the ground.
Oh, really?
All right. So it's not like they launch it in space and then flick a switch.
Okay.
When they pack it into the container ready to go onto the shuttle and launch it up into space, the thing's powered on the whole time.
Right.
Now, part of the problem with that was that to actually keep the thing up and ready to go, they had to keep it powered on and in a nitrogen-purged environment for the entire time that it was sitting
on
the ground.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. You'd have to have it...
Do you want to guess the cost to do that?
Nitrogen's not expensive, but...
Nitrogen's not expensive.
Yeah, but putting it in a box...
Well, I mean, to put this into perspective,
yeah.
Do you want to have a guess how big Hubble is?
Oh, God. It's so hard to tell because there's very little of it.
How about you think, like a car, or a house?
Something? Oh, like a school bus.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking
about a school bus.
Pretty much a school bus.
It
weighs about 11 ton, and it's about the size of a school bus.
Wow.
And they had to keep this in a nitrogen-purged environment for...
In a sealed... like container in a Tupperware big enough for a bus
powered up, and because because it's powered up, it's also producing heat.
Oh, sugar. Yeah,
so it's not like they can just put it in an insulated container.
Oh, right. And it wouldn't, like, it's not like it would be thermally insulated either, because they plan for it to be out in space where it doesn't matter, it can vent all at once.
Well, I mean, it's radiative, all the heat cooling for it is radiative,
right? Exactly. Yeah.
So they had this thing, you know, and they've got it in this building, you know, it's basically keeping it powered up, keeping it in a nitrogen-purged environment for the whole time and cooling it because the power usage for Hubble is actually quite substantial because, like, you know, it's got those big solar panels.
And hang on a second. Why would they have to keep it in a nitrogen environment?
Prevent corrosion and things like that.
Right.
And also to keep...
Obviously, I know because I'm just so smart. But I think also, that's really... I do the same thing with some of my weird chemicals.
The lens is clean.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. You don't want anything like... Because the coating...
Anything even remotely like condensation or oxidation.
The coatings on the lenses, you know, inside it are designed to be operating in space. They're not designed to be operating in an oxidized environment.
Yeah.
Like Aaron, you know, so
yeah, right.
all those coatings and stuff would have been attacked by the oxygen, you know, if they hadn't have, because the entire time it was on the ground, you know, they had it in a nitrogen-purged environment already. But to do this cost them $6 million a month.
Wow.
And they had to do it for 4 years.
Whoa, what?
So just that delay cost them nearly $300 million.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah.
So, all right, were there any pieces of it that, I mean, there's a lot of very delicate lenses and components in there, would any of them have been affected by, say, a thermal experiment? Like, the thing's designed to be in 0-0 out in space, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if let's say your glass lens or your crystal lens expands at a different rate to the metal housing that's around it, would any kind of thermal expansion mess with that?
You know, as I said, it's radiatively cool, but part of that whole thing is that one of the big things that actually happened with Hubble, and this is a really interesting one, is that, you know, how we have, like, if you look inside a computer now and stuff like that, you quite often see heat pipes, the little copper pipes that they use
to carry
heat from place to place. Hubble was one of the first major users of heat pipes.
Because really?
Because all the optics in Hubble are heat pipe cooled.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a big copper heat sink with pipes coming out.
They have basically massive amounts of heat pipes running through the thing to actually, you know, basically radiate the heat from...
Wow.
So that any heat that's inside it and build up inside it through the mechanisms, anything like that, gets radiated to the outside.
How is it powered?
Solar powered.
Okay.
It's just solar because it has those, you know, I mean, you've seen the, like, when you see the pictures of Hubble, it has those wonderful big solar panels.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's 2.8 kilowatts of solar panels on it.
Okay, well, that's plenty.
Yeah.
All right.
The interesting part about that, though, is that one of the reasons why it's now getting to the point where they're starting to worry about it, you know, because at the moment they're starting to worry about, you know, when their mission is going to end. They're probably looking at 2030 to 2040 at this stage.
Okay.
And one of the big reasons for that is the solar panels degrading. Because the solar panels did actually get serviced in one of the missions, I believe, if I remember correctly.
Really?
They
went and changed out the solar panels.
They didn't change out all of them, but they did. I think they added some, and they also repaired some that had been damaged.
Was that the time when there was an issue with it, where they needed to do something to make sure that it would keep operating?
So there was actually 4 missions to it, I believe.
Wow.
Oh, that was 4.
Yeah, because it was... And it's the only satellite that we've ever done... We don't know if there have been other ones that have been done.
Yeah.
Because there's always...
Lemming just had a very...
Honestly,
yeah. As far as we civilians know...
But it's the only one that we know of that has been serviced on orbit. You know, and because it's a pretty major thing to do that. You know, I mean, you've got to remember that because it's traveling in a geosynchronous orbit, this thing's traveling at about 30,000 kilometers an hour. You know, so you've got to try and match that speed, and you've got to match it very, very closely.
How far out is it?
It's a geosynchronous orbit, which, if I remember correctly, is 33,600 kilometers.
So were they docked with it, or like?
Yeah, but basically, so you remember on the shuttle they had the arm, the Canadarm.
Yes, that's
so
right. Yeah.
Basically, what they did was they would come up to it and they would match its orbit, and so they would match its orbit and then use the arm to actually grapple the telescope and hold onto it.
Yeah.
And then they could you know, go on and do whatever they needed to do.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it's an amazing thing to do. Yeah, and
that's very impressive.
Yeah.
There are some people talking about, you know, like with the JWST that's just been launched. And good news with the JWST is they have announced that it is now fully aligned and ready to start operating.
Hey!
So we should start seeing some things coming out from that over the next couple of years. That's going to be, like...
That's going to be crazy.
If you thought the images coming out of Hubble were amazing...
That's it. I mean, I don't think we ever really realised how good Hubble was going to be, did it?
Yeah,
and like,
yeah.
How long it's last, and it's still fine and stuff. I think it was somewhere they found something...
recently? There's lots of things that have been found with Hubble.
In
dark space where they found...
Oh, so the famous one, and I've talked about this many times because I love it, is the Hubble Ultra Deep Field. So there's actually two images. There's the Hubble Deep Field, which is where they basically took Hubble, spent, I believe it was a total of 2 months of exposure time, basically pointing at a section of the sky that looked like it had nothing there.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about this the last time.
And so, like, you know, you have this image where they're basically just pointing it at nothing and going, oh, there's nothing there. And then, you know, they build up this image and you know, over time. And, like, because you've got to think that, you know, when we're on the ground here, the amount of photons hitting any point around us is trillions upon trillions upon trillions, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas Hubble, when it's pointing at something like this, is receiving, like, on the order of maybe a couple of photons a second, you know.
Yeah.
But over the 2 months, you know, it builds up this image, you know, and everything like that, and then they open up this image and have a look, and there is hundreds of galaxies in this image. And they're like, whoa, okay, that's a little crazy. So they decided to do it again. So they did the Hubble Ultra Deep Field, which is where they took that first image, looked for an area of that image, and then pointed Hubble at that area for, I believe it was about 5 months the second time.
Wow.
All right, and just basically as much as possible kept Hubble pointed at that one spot in the sky. All right, and then, you know, built up this image over time, and then pull up the image, and again, hundreds upon thousands of galaxies, you know, just no. So pretty much no matter which direction we pointed Hubble and had a look, you just find more and more and more and more. You know, there's
any photography enthusiasts out there, just imagine doing a 5 month exposure.
Yeah, five months long exposure.
Crazy, isn't it? Absolutely crazy.
Wow.
So yeah, like it's the things that have come out of Hubble are wonderful. Do you want to take a short break and then I'll talk about the repair mission and why that happened.
Yes.
Oh,
I'm looking forward to this bit. Okay.
Are you ready to change your world?
Yeah.
The City of Canning's anticipated Changing Your World Conference, supported generously by Lottery West, is now virtual with the potential of reaching a national and international audience. This three-day event from May 11 to 13 is jam-packed with presentations, interviews, podcasts, panel sessions, online demonstrations, networking opportunities, and more. Grab your tickets now at canningchangingyourworld.com.au, sponsors of RTRFM.
Whoa. And we're back.
Hey.
So, actually, sorry, I was just checking, and it wasn't four missions, it was five.
Five repair missions.
Five repair missions to the Hubble. Last one was done in 2009.
When it was first put together, I mean, it would have been a completely different kind of solar cell. I mean...
So, as I said, I believe that in one of the missions they did actually add to the solar panels. They didn't replace them outright.
Oh, right. Okay.
The main missions that they did were mainly around the optics. And so, I mean, there's always the famous one of, you know, when they first launched Hubble and they got the first images back from it, they were out of focus.
That's the bit I remember now,
And like, you know, it's there was what they call spherical aberration on the image, which basically means that the image is the mirror is incorrectly ground. It's slightly more spherical or less spherical than it should be. Now, the really crazy part is that it was out of alignment, if I remember correctly, by something like 4 angstroms, which is just mind-bogglingly small amounts. We're talking, you know, on the order of a few molecules, you know, out of alignment. But that was enough to throw it out of alignment.
Giving me angstroms.
The really silly part about this is that the whole reason that it got launched with this mirror that was incorrectly ground was that when they were actually doing the testing jig was set up incorrectly.
Oh.
So now they tested it and thought that it was incorrectly ground, reground it, and then retested it. And because they retested it again with it incorrectly set up,
was this a NASA thing or a third party?
No, it was
maker.
A third party. If I remember correctly, it was Kodak.
Because it's been Kodak
doing the grinding. The interesting thing is, you know, with a lot of these things, like, you know, when NASA does that, if remember the movie Contact? Have you seen that one?
Yeah.
You know, why do something once when you can do it twice for twice the price?
Right.
They actually did create two mirrors. And they actually went back after the fact and checked the second mirror that was done, I can't remember the name of the company, but it was done by another company, and that mirror was actually correct.
Oh, they had a redundancy company. Okay.
They had a second company who actually did another mirror that was, you know, as a backup in case something happened with the first one.
Oh, Eastman Kodak, egg on the face for that one.
And the really sad thing is that they actually were looking at checking the mirrors against each other originally, but then decided against it because it was going to be too expensive.
No. But we'll make two mirrors, but then we won't do the final check. You know?
Yep.
Oh, no, that's way too expensive.
Yeah. So, but the first.
We'll duplicate every part on this entire project, but testing them against each other, no, that'd be crazy. Yep.
The really great part, though, is that the first one that actually went up, the first mission that actually went up to repair Hubble. Mm-hmm. Because there was a lot of like discussion about how are they going to fix it. They didn't know how they were going to fix it. You know, like they knew that they could probably do a mission, but they didn't actually know what they could do to actually fix it. The story that I love is that the guy who actually designed the fix for it was actually staying in a hotel, and they had one of those like shaving mirrors that's on like the little expanding arm.
Yeah,
and he was like looking at that, you know, like you know, just shaving. And that gave him the idea for how to fix Hubble. And that's basically what happened was that they went up there and they put in a replacement optics box. And that replacement optics box actually uses a little extendable arm to actually stick another optical path adjustment in the way of the main beam so that it will actually correct the optics.
Oh, wow. Oh, right.
And that's how it actually got.
Oh, but so it, like...
Yeah, basically stuck a pair of spectacles in front of the...
on a boom arm.
On a little arm just pops up.
Oh,
and
wow.
So, yeah, all the... Because over time, as they did the various missions also replaced the optical tools that were on board the telescope. And, yeah, so initially the first one that went up would actually correct it for all the various tools. But then as they replaced the various tools, you know, over time, they would actually build in corrective lensing so that the like image coming into the various tools would actually be corrected as it came into the tool. So that by the end of it, they didn't actually have to use that array anymore.
Right.
That's still pretty cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's correct. Well, yeah, you told me this one before, the idea of those shaving mirrors. Yep. I love those stories inventors like that.
It's brilliant. I just can't imagine it actually being there on that... On the Hubble, it's just the concept of a shaving mirror, you know?
Yeah.
Like a little eyeglass going in and out, you know?
But then,
it's like a magnifying glass. You know, you'd be looking at something, you'd be going like that, isn't it? You know?
Yep. So. Yeah. I mean, it's probably a little bit more complex than that, but yeah, that's basically what they did.
But what a great place to get the. I mean, that's definitely one of those eureka moments, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And in the shower, right? Perfect. Man.
So, very much a slightly belated happy birthday to Hubble. And
happy birthday, Hubble.
Hopefully we've got... I mean, the way it's looking, they've had some issues with it over the last couple of years, but it's looking like we've probably got it till about 2030, at which point, you know, then it will be out of fuel and the orbit will decay too much and it will, you know...
Crash into the ISS.
Well, it's in geosynchronous. So in geosynchronous, it'll probably actually go out, not in. So geosynchronous satellites when they because the way they orbit that when they station keep they have to pull themselves in all the time, and so when they actually lose control of their orbit they tend to slide out, you know, and
right,
yeah.
Oh, we'll just get someone from Mars giving out about our space junk.
Yeah.
I've said this before, and if you want to see something, you know, look up the website stuffin.space.
Definitely.
Yeah,
and how much stuff is up there, because it is, you know, we worry about trash on the ground. We're going to have to start worrying about trash in space.
We're not far from locking ourselves in.
I did hear that. I think with that is a Starlink that Elon Musk, when he puts all his satellites, it's got to be in that lower orbit.
Mm.
It's got to get to a point where
12,000 of them.
Anything going up into space is becomes high risk because you're so likely to actually crash into one of them.
Well, who just recently blew up one of their own satellites? Was it China or Russia? It was only about 2-3 months ago. No, it was probably about 4 months ago.
No, it was
ago.
China.
Yeah,
it was China. Yeah. And they were just like testing. They're saying, oh, well, it's, you know, it's our satellite. We'll do whatever we want. Mm. But every time you blow up a satellite, it means you've got, you
more
know, 10,000 little bits of that can potentially destroy anything they go
through. There's a very scary thing called a Kessler scenario where basically the... you have so much debris in space, you know, in orbit around the planet, that is constantly colliding with each other, that it basically just creates a mat of debris around, and anything that tries to launch out of the atmosphere will just get shredded. And so that's something that people are starting to realise, hey, maybe we should be a bit more circumspect about what we launch and
oh, I
and
think those military satellites with ELISAs, they start doing a bit of a clean-up job.
Oh, yeah. These ones that we don't know about.
Quick one just on that, before I go. There's a great project in Hawaii where they're actually tracking space junk, and they're doing it using a 14-meter mercury mirror.
Wow.
Wow.
Basically a big dish of mercury that they spin at a certain speed, and it creates the perfect parabola, and that's the mirror for their telescope.
That is awesome.
Yep.
Right, I have to look that one up.
Yep.
I want to see mercury mirror telescope.
Oh, my God.
No worries. All right.
Anyway.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. It is so good to be back.
So good.
Oh my gosh.
I love this part of the show. So, you know, always cheers me up. All right.
See you in a couple of weeks.
See you in a few weeks.
See you next time. Onwards to victory.